This is But You're Wrong. I'm Keith Bodela.
I am Greg DiNicola.
So I'm recording live. Well, not really live. Well, I'm recording live. I guess that works.
You are live.
From my childhood bedroom. I'm in New Jersey right now. It's a little stop off before going back to Pennsylvania.
Now, where were you this weekend, or this week, Keith? Well, news lead in. So what are you doing there? I'm a real douche.
That's like a Fox and Friends kind of interview question.
Oh my god, Fox and Friends, my favorite.
what were you doing there? I spent the last probably about the last week up in your neck of the woods.
On the Cape, right?
First I was in Quincy. And that was quite the eventful party.
Yeah, I mean, you might call it a party. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, get together, whatever you want to call it. It was very interesting. Hopefully I can clean up some of that audio that we recorded.
Yeah, me and Keith decided that in the middle of a big gathering of people that we would just start recording what was going on. A lot of it was just insanity, but...
Yes. There was there were some characters there who used expressions that I had not heard people really use in seriousness.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like one of
yeah. We'll talk about this another time maybe after we see how the audio comes out.
Excellent.
Because some of that might not need to be recapped. And then I spent a while in the Cape and. With the family, and that went pretty well. Got to see family that's kind of far away in Seattle, and my niece is becoming also quite the character. She's pretty funny.
How old is she?
She is three.
Three, okay.
Yes.
Little kids are hilarious.
Yeah.
They really are, because they just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And why should they? I mean, they're little kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't quite know that you shouldn't say certain things, so like she called my dad out for not having a lot of hair.
Nice.
She was like, Papa, you don't have enough hair.
Wow. So one of these days, I think that Keith Bodela should host a revival of Kids Say the Darnest Things. So instead of Bill Cosby, it's going to be Keith Bodela, but you're only going to interview black children.
Interesting.
No, you're no good.
I'm gonna be honest. I would go for that because I would definitely like the paycheck. But I don't know if the networks would go for it.
I mean, I'm not sure how you pitch that to a network. But I mean, if anyone's gonna pitch it, it's probably me.
Yeah.
But I would say I know the perfect host.
Listen, it's like Kids Say the Darndest Thing, except racially reversed.
Yeah. I don't see anything wrong with that. But anyways, so...
Well, I see one problem, because I'm not a known person. And they'd be like, who the fuck is that guy?
Who the hell is Keith Bodela? So he's a hell of a guy. Read his fucking book. Listen to our goddamn podcast.
He does impressions of Jabba the Hutt and Jesse Ventura. It'll be great.
It's very topical.
Occasionally, he'll throw a little Batman voice at the kids. And it'll be wonderful.
So you were saying family from Seattle. Is your brother out in Seattle?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I don't think I ever knew where he actually lived.
Well, he's moved around a bit in the last couple of years.
Gotcha.
He's out in Seattle now, so a little far away. But and they're expecting their second kid, so he figured it'd be a good time to get the family together before they're kind of stuck out there for a little while.
Yeah, kids are a burden.
Yeah, especially newborns. They don't really travel that well.
No, and they're not fun. I mean, like, people think they're cute, which is true. I mean, babies can be cute, but it's like, I mean, they're not interesting.
Yeah, especially when they're first born. For the first like 2 months, all they do is sleep
and poop.
Yeah,
they sleep and they poop, and that's about it.
Yeah, which is fine.
No, I know. I mean, I know they're not capable of anything else.
But they're not, again, they're not entertaining.
Now, I have, it's not a theory, it's just a frame of mind, state of mind. where when a child to me is less than, especially less than 1 year old, I always call them an it, because I don't really recognize them as having a sexual identity. Or like a gender identity. I always just refer to it as an it. And a lot of people have gotten offended. Like, I'll refer to their, I'll be like, oh, is it, you know, where is it? And they're like, it's a boy. You know, like, they'll be mad at me. And I'm like, it's not that I don't recognize your kid as a person, but it's just, to me, it's not a he or a she yet. Huh. I mean, obviously it is, but I mean, the kid doesn't, it doesn't, either way.
Yeah.
It's not going to act any different.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if I would ever do that, but
I do it completely unconsciously. I don't mean to do it, but I always do. I always just say it. And I'm sure it's offensive. Like, I understand why people get mad at me, but I don't know why. I just do it. I see a baby that's really little, and I just go, oh, how old is it? You know? I'm out of my mind, so that's my defense.
All right.
Take it or leave it, Keith, you son of a bitch.
This is the episode where Greg turns into a belligerent drunk. We have to start calling you Uncle Greg, the alcoholic.
Oh, man, I can't wait till I'm Uncle Greg. Can you wait till you have kids? And I'm just showing up at family parties, just shit face. I'm just like, I'm trying to like hand you kids beers, and I'm just like, what's going on, kids?
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something.
You like my mustache?
If you have a mustache, I'm not letting you anywhere near my kids.
Oh my god, it's gonna be so good, dude. I'll be cooking, you know. Hey, kids, come over here, have some manicotti.
Let me teach you how to cook pasta.
Maybe like Clemenza, only way creepier.
And then we find you in the kitchen, and you're not actually talking to one of my kids. You're just talking to like the My Little Buddy doll, and you're just
I'm just sitting there. My pants are around my ankles. There's a beer in my hand, and I'm talking to a doll.
Let me tell you something else about life. All right,
it's cruel. And women are terrible. All they do is lie. I'm gonna make such a good old man.
You'll be a fantastic old man. I think the middle part might be a little rough for you.
I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna go straight from being young to old man. I think the transition is gonna be fairly smooth, because I'm already kind of old. Not old as in old, but just old as in spirited. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just really, I don't know, just really salty about everything.
You're just a curmudgeon-y old man.
Right. And I love it. I love being that old guy that just likes to shit on things. It's like, oh, wait, you got dreams? Forget about it.
Go I had to dreams once, too.
Yeah, shit got fucked up for me. It's going to get fucked up for you, too.
Well, maybe things will turn around for you, Greg.
No, actually, things are looking up. So
things are looking up, which maybe we'll talk about in the future.
Sure.
I don't know how much you want to get into it yet.
Maybe in a couple weeks.
All right. So stay tuned for that. So I was trying to see what we could maybe talk about, get a little mileage out of, and I had a little backlog of things, but I was also looking to see what anniversaries were coming up. It will be 13 years since the death of Rodney Ainsel. Do you know who that is?
God, that name sounds real familiar.
I did not know who this man was. And then as soon as I read the little blurb about him, I knew. It all made sense why he was famous. He was an Australian from The Bush, who served as the inspiration for Paul Hogan's character, Crocodile Dundee.
Oh!
Ainsel became famous in 1977 after he was stranded in an extremely remote country in the Northern Territory, and he survived for 56 days with limited supplies. And this was the other part that I found interesting. In 1999, he was killed in a shootout with law enforcement officers.
Really?
Yep. So I wanted to explore this man a little bit more.
How do
you go from being the inspiration for a Crocodile Dundee and surviving in a remote territory to then being killed in a police shootout?
He must have been a bad dude. No one just knew about it. But I say let's find out.
Right, so it seems he spent his entire life in Australia. I like that his little Wikipedia occupation says cattle grazer and buffalo hunter.
Yeah, I see that he was hunting feral water buffalo.
Yes, in the top end.
I like that.
Sounds very British. In the top end.
I guess that's a section of Australia?
Yeah.
I'm not very well versed on Australia, I'll be honest.
Neither am I, but we'll assume that it's some northern territory.
Got it. It'd be great if it was in the south.
Well, is this supposed to be upside down?
That's true.
Let's see, I'm just kidding. Okay, none of the early life stuff is important. All right.
Let's focus on the ordeal, yeah.
Yes. In May 1977, shortly after completing a buffalo catching job in Kununurra, Western Australia, Ansell decided to travel to the Victoria River on what he claimed was a fishing trip. He was not specific about his plans, only telling his then-girlfriend, Lorraine.
I love that her name's Lorraine.
Lorraine!
If you ever have a kid like that, I'll disown you.
He would be back in a few months. So right there, I'm surprised, because can you imagine any kind of girl that you could date and consider a girlfriend and just be like, yeah, I'm going away, I'll be back in a few months?
No, what woman puts up with that? I have never met a woman that's like, oh, you'll be back in a few months? Yeah, sure. That's cool. I'll just sit tight.
I mean, yeah, not to badmouth Lorraine, but she probably is not the best type of girlfriend.
Either that or she's just dumb.
Maybe he was her first boyfriend.
You know what? That might be true. I bet she de-virginized her.
Maybe. And she's like, I will wait for you.
She's like, I love him. I'll never love anyone else because I have no one to compare you to. You want to leave me for a few months? Go right ahead. I'll be sitting right here. I'll be hanging out with kangaroos until you get back. Because that's what they do.
In Australia?
Yeah. They box them. They herd them.
I would love to see somebody herd kangaroos.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. You gotta build real high fences.
Have you ever seen somebody herd kangaroos, or are you just imagining?
Yeah, absolutely not. I have never seen anything like it.
Herding kangaroos.
I'm gonna look it up, though.
I wonder if that would be a profession. Maybe I missed my calling. You wanted to be a jockey. Maybe I should be a kangaroo herder.
You know, I can think of worse jobs. Well, what would you do with them, though? It's not like they produce anything.
They just produce other kangaroos, really.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like humans in that way, if you think about it. I mean, they don't actually make anything. It's not like a sheep where you can use their fur or anything. It's just, it just eats, it shits, and it creates more kangaroos. I don't know. You know, I remember when we originally, like right after 9/11, we invaded Afghanistan, and I read a news report. And it was like, oh, well, the United Kingdom is sending their troops, and Australia has committed, you know, whatever amount of troops to the cause. And the first thing that I thought of, I don't know why, but the first thing that popped into my mind was a bunch of kangaroos wearing helmets and carrying machine guns. And for some reason, to me, that would be their army. Because
I think that would be a good army.
It would be fantastic.
We should have done that to end World War II sooner. You know, Hitler looks out and goes, oh, what is happening today? Holy shit, the kangaroo's coming.
Hey, by the way, I love your Hitler impression. It was more French than anything else, but I'll take it.
Secretly, Hitler was a Frenchman.
Yeah, he was a self-loathing Frenchman.
I'm trying to think of an in for a German. Ich The kangaroos are coming.
All right, that's better.
Mein Führer, the kangaroos.
Do your best Colonel Klink impression.
I know nothing about the kangaroos. I don't see them. He just turns his back, and then all the kangaroos start hopping in and riding out with...
Just jumping over the wall.
Yeah. All the prisoners of war get on the kangaroos' backs and jump off. Ride them into battle.
I love that the guy that played Colonel Klink was Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, hey, we really want you to play this part as the Nazi. And he's like, I will do it if I can make him the dumbest character, like, in the fucking world. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I'll do it. And they're like, absolutely, that's fine.
It's kind of weird that Hogan's Heroes was the concept for a show.
It's an extremely strange concept. I mean, a bunch of guys in a prisoner of war camp held by Nazis.
Yeah.
And not only was it a strange concept for a show, it's a strange concept for a comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see years from now them being like, listen, we're going to make a comedy about soldiers that are kidnapped in Afghanistan.
Right.
I don't...
Held by the Taliban.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's odd. I mean, if you were like, oh, well, Spielberg and Hanks are making, like, a miniseries about guys that were held captive by the Nazis, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Comedy show. I mean, it was awesome. I like Hogan's Heroes. It just doesn't make any sense.
But then they make this guy Crocodile Dundee. So when Ansel's motorboat was capsized and sunk by, quote-unquote, something big, he claimed it was a whale. No one knew where to find him because he didn't tell anybody. He said to his then girlfriend, "I'll be back in a while. Don't fuck anybody and make sure the kangaroos are well cared for."
I'm like Santa Claus and Jesus. I'll know if you're having sex.
Yeah. I'll just sense it. Ansel managed to board his tender, a small dinghy with only a single oar, and retrieve his 2 8-week-old bull terriers and a small amount of equipment, including a rifle, a knife, some canned food, and bedding. But with no fresh water, Ansel was in a perilous situation, stranded almost 200 kilometers, 120 miles for us Americans.
Good, I was nearest... just about to say, I have no idea how far that is.
from the nearest permanent human settlement. Worse still, one of his dogs had a broken leg.
Oh, man, the poor bull terrier.
During the night, Ansel's dinghy drifted out to sea, eventually washing up on a small island at the mouth of the Fitzmaurice River, north of the Victoria. Over the next 48 hours, Ansel traveled up the river, becoming severely dehydrated, but eventually finding fresh water above the saltwater tidal range. He subsisted on wild cattle and buffalo, hunting by day to feed himself and his dogs. He sometimes resorted to drinking cattle blood as a substitute for water, the fluids helping to maintain his body's electrolyte balance.
He should have just got some Gatorade. Not available?
I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna say no Gatorade trees around. Although he should have definitely marketed something and called it cattle blood, and then just said cattle blood is it in you. And then it would have never sold a single.
No, because no one would ever want to drink that.
Yeah, except Charlie Sheen. He would have been like, "Fuck tiger blood," and he would have just bought it by the caseload.
Yeah, sure, I'm out of my mind, so I'll drink this.
I'll drink it.
Fuck it.
Or weird people that are like, I love drinking cattle blood because they like to pretend they're like vampires or something. And then they buy it and they go, this isn't real cattle blood.
Oh, yeah.
It's Fruit Punch Gatorade.
I love those vampire people. I met one. A good friend of ours, he was roommates with a kid in college who... I mean, he said that – he didn't say he was a vampire, but he said that him and his friends like to vampire role play. And, like, he had, like, a cape and stuff and, like
– I thought you were talking about, like, one of those, like, role-playing games.
No.
Like Vampire Dungeons and Dragons, but he had, like, a cape that he would
No, they pretended that they were vampires. And we would always ask – we would always ask our buddy there that, you know, what does he sleep in a coffin or, you know, and anytime he'd mention his name, we're like, bleh. In a freshman year, his like second semester or something.
Now, was vampire role playing just like code for gay stuff?
You know, and I think we asked him that too, and I don't think Dan ever became privy to exactly what went on. He never really got that into it, but yeah, I guess there was some vampire role play. That's as far as I really know about it.
I really wish you had found out more. I'm a little disappointed that the story ends here, but
yeah, I'm sorry that's where it's gonna end.
So cattle blood.
Yeah, I forgot how we got there.
He was also able to follow bees to their hive to retrieve honey. That's difficult.
That's talented, really.
Yeah, I mean, to try and follow bees. During the night, Ansel slept in a tree fork out of reach of crocodiles, although he shared the tree with a brown tree snake. More gay stuff.
a brown tree snake.
It was just really another guy in there.
an aborigine guy hanging out in a tree. And a nice tree snake you got there.
That's...
Is that a brown tree snake, or are you just happy to see me?
That's not a brown tree snake. This is a brown tree snake.
Zip.
At one point, he shot a 5-meter, 16-foot crocodile whose head he kept as a souvenir.
That sounds like a big crocodile.
He had... Okay, huh. So now I'm curious if he was actually trying to get out of there, or if he was just like, fuck it, and then just started to live there.
Let's see.
Ansel never counted on being rescued, so maybe not. He had told others he would be away for months, and any search parties would be combing over the Victoria River, not the Fitzmaurice. He rested his hope on walking over land to a pastoral section when the wet season began. One day, Ansel heard the distinctive tickering of horse bells, which drew him to two Aboriginal stockmen and their cattle manager, Luke McCall. Although he was somewhat emaciated, Ansel was otherwise healthy. Once back home, he apparently kept his 7-week ordeal to himself, fearing he would upset his mother with his recklessness. He later claimed the experience was hardly a big deal, explaining, "All the blokes up in this country..." I was going to try doing this in an accent, but I don't think I can.
Do it.
Hang on. I gotta find my into Australian.
Pretend it's an Outback commercial.
you just
ordered a Bloomin' Onion.
Come to and Outback.
The Chocolate Thunder from Down Under.
Come
which
to
is
Outback.
Definitely a game.
All the blokes. No, that's too British.
Yeah.
Solace of a taint, because I'm trying to think of Michael Caine when he says tangerine, and that's very Australian the way he says it. Tangerine. All the blokes up in this country who work with cattle, ringers, stockmen, bull catchers, whatever, all of them have really narrow shapes. Just go back to normal.
Yeah.
But they never. Now I can't stop. But they never talk about it. I think the opinion is that if you come through in one piece, and you're still alive, then nothing else matters. It's like going out.
You gotta sound like old Greg.
Old Greg.
You don't know old Greg?
No, it's old Greg.
Oh my god. I don't even... If you don't know what it is, I don't think I should bring it up. I'll have to send you the link. You can watch it, and we'll talk about it some other time. It's too much to take in all at once.
Oh god.
It's amazing. I pretend I didn't say that.
Okay, where was I? Oh, because I started laughing at this part. And you're still alive, then nothing else matters. It's like going out to shoot a kangaroo.
Nice.
You don't come back and say you missed by half an inch. You either got him or you didn't. So that is how I looked at it, until the paper got hold of the story, and that changed a lot of things. The local papers got hold of the story, and Ansel dubbed the modern-day Robinson Crusoe was making headlines by August 1977. Now, hang on, I want to back up here a second, though, and go. And he was he kept his 7-week ordeal to himself, fearing he would upset his mother with his recklessness. So him going, "Hey, Mom, I'm going out. I'll be back in a couple months," doesn't upset her at all. But him being like, "During that couple months, I was drinking cattle blood," she freaks out.
Yeah, I feel like if you told her that you were going to be gone for a few months, it's your mother. So she's going to be expecting the worst.
Yeah.
So then you come back and you tell her that. Now, first off, you're back, so her mind is at least somewhat at ease.
Right.
And then you tell her that, she might be upset, but she's not going to be nearly as upset as if you died, so whatever. She was probably already expecting you to die if you went away for a few months. At least my mother would.
Yeah.
My mom would probably
beg me not to go.
If I was like, "Mom, I'm going to be back in like 3 months," she's going to be like, "Oh, great. You're going to die." Whatever you're doing that's going to take 3 months is probably going to lead to your death. And unfortunately, that's probably a reasonable expectation.
Probably, yeah. If I said, "Mom, I'm going away for 3 months," she would assume that I am going to end up dead. I'm going to be one of those Nightline stories.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to show a picture of me being happy, like, right before I go on my trip. And they're going to be like, "This was not the last time he would be in trouble."
Yeah, and then they'd show, like, you a picture with your arm around your girlfriend, and
yeah.
And then everyone would suspect her of just messing around. I don't know.
Yeah. "He had just gotten engaged, but were things really all that nice?" And then they would cut to commercial, and then they would come back and be like, "We're talking about the story of Keith, who ran away for 3 months, not telling anyone where he would go, and wound up dead in Australia."
Is that your Lester Holt voice?
Is that who the guy is? I couldn't think of who he is.
On Dateline? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the host.
But they have a lot of those shows, even like on Court TV and A&E, and now there's like a Discovery Channel solely devoted to like crime scene investigation and shit.
Oh, I did not know.
Yeah. There's a lot out there, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not with it. That's the problem.
You're not up to date on your bizarre disappearing stories. Usually the husband had something to do with it, though.
Yeah, usually he is very guilty.
Yeah. Later life, following the unexpected blockbuster success of Crocodile Dundee, Ansel unsuccessfully took Hogan to court. His inability to profit from the films remained a source of bitterness his entire life.
Oh, really?
So he had nothing to do with it.
Oh, so they just kind of took the story and ran with it. It wasn't even like – he wasn't even like an advisor or anything like that.
They didn't like license his story or anything like that. This is where he starts to take a bad turn. In the 1980s, he found himself in a protracted dispute with the Northern Territory government over the controversial bovine brucellosis and tuberculosis eradication campaign. To comply with the act, Ansel was forced to kill 3,000 head of feral buffalo on his property.
That's a lot.
Yeah. How big was his property? I mean, he must have been doing okay for himself.
The other thing is like, I feel like this is the kind of guy that if he's going to kill that many like, he's beheading the buffalo. Like, he doesn't have a factory. Like, he's not just lining them up and shooting, like, a bolt through their ears. Like, he's butchering these
buffalo. He actually is killing them.
Yeah. That sounds difficult.
Yeah. He had originally planned to capture and domesticate the animals, creating a pastoral herd that would have afforded his family a comfortable lifestyle, arguing that the money spent on the program would be better spent on research on AIDS. Ansel considered the destruction of the animals an outrageous waste of good livestock.
I mean, I don't know the whole tuberculosis issue they're talking about, but
I'm wondering if it's like mad cow?
Yeah, maybe.
Three neighboring grazers were eventually awarded $100,000 in government loans, but Ansel was never compensated for his losses.
Uh-oh.
Mimosa pigro weeds also began taking over the floodplain, rendering it useless. With no money to fight the invasive weeds, The Ansells were forced to sell their cattle station in June 1991. The couples... I don't think it ever says who he marries, though.
Maybe it's in the early life part that we...
I wonder if it was in a part that we skipped.
No, maybe it's Lorraine.
No, well, oh, maybe. Maybe he did marry Lorraine.
Let's hope.
They fell in love at the Enchantment of the Sea Dance.
She was clearly an understanding woman. And he kept a box full of ears with him.
3,000 buffalo ears. The couple's 15-year marriage soon disintegrated, and the Ansells divorced.
Oh.
Depressed, unemployed, and cash-strapped, Ansel began growing marijuana, later becoming a user of amphetamine. In June 1996, he began dating Sherry Ann Hewson, a fellow drug user.
Uh-oh.
See, they lived along a river, and over the next couple of years, the couple's drug addiction became more destructive, culminating in a psychotic episode that ultimately claimed his life in a maelstrom of police gunfire.
Oh, man. Sounds like a day in Dorchester.
So he apparently just goes nuts.
He couldn't handle his amphetamines.
How good of a word is maelstrom, though?
That is a great word.
Ansel was killed following a police shootout on August 3rd, 1999. The deadly altercation began at 10:45 a.m. That's kind of a weird time for stuff to start. He ambushed a sergeant and a constable with a shot from his 30-30 lever-action rifle, deflecting off a police car and fatally striking the sergeant in the abdomen below his bulletproof vest.
Ooh.
A gun battle immediately erupted involving numerous officers of the Adelaide River Police Station. About 5 minutes into the fight, Ansel was shot dead. The constable, James O'Brien, killed Ansel with a shotgun after unloading on Ansel's position with his Glock, having missed all his previous shots. The battle ended the authorities' 12-hour search for an attacker who shot at two nearby residences the previous night. Ansel's girlfriend, who was 28 at the time, I guess, was with him, but escaped before the gun battle occurred. She fled, turning herself in.
Wow.
It was later determined that he had been... Ooh. Ansel's motive was unknown, but they later determined that Ansel had been raving about Freemasons prior to his death. He was distraught, apparently convinced that Freemasons had kidnapped his two sons and were now stalking him. Like Ansel, Hewson also suffered from severe mental illness and regularly abused drugs. During the coroner's inquest, psychiatrist Robert Parker... Isn't that a musician, Robert Parker?
I believe so. I'll look it up.
Made the following observations on Ansel's mental state before his death. There is no doubt that Ansel was affected by amphetamine intoxication prior to his fatal interaction with the sergeant... Ansel's behavior prior to the initial shots being fired is consistent with amphetamine intoxication with restlessness, hypervigilance, anxiety, anger, and impaired judgment. He was also affected by a paranoid psychotic state, which is typical of chronic amphetamine users. Barker also determined that Ansel and Hewson had developed a shared psychosis, stating, "The two of them developed a shared delusional state. Hewson's bizarre delusions, which were apparently precipitated by flashbacks and memories of childhood abuse by Freemasons, do not appear to be typical of amphetamine psychosis. It is possible, therefore, that one or both parties had underlying vulnerability to mental illness, which was enhanced and sustained by their regular use."
Wow.
So, is the Freemasons that he was concerned about the same Freemasons that everybody else is apparently worried about in the United States? Are they all the same Freemasons?
To be honest, I don't know. The thing is that the Freemasons I know have been around forever. You know, and like I know like Ben Franklin was a Freemason and a bunch of the other founding fathers were. So I can only imagine it was created outside of America, or at least back in the day, you know, it was probably, I would assume it was probably British. So if the British brought it here, then they must have brought it to Australia.
To Australia, yeah. That would make sense.
I'm obviously making a lot of assumptions there, but
if
it existed that long ago, I would imagine. I don't think it's an American creation.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it could be. I think if we were going to create something like that, it'd be a lot weirder.
I think it'd just be more militant.
That's probably true, Jim. So Crocodile Dundee was apparently based on this guy.
That name did sound familiar to me, and I'm sure I heard it like in passing at some point. But man, I had no idea about that guy. I mean, I never heard the story before. Obviously,
I would have thought. I didn't realize that he was the basis for anything, but I would have thought, you know, maybe he got some fame from it. But it sounds like he really got dicked over.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he saw. I mean, obviously, he didn't see anything of it. I mean, even if, you know, obviously there was a pretty big movie back in the day. You know, it was no Star Wars or anything, but, you know, even if he had gotten some credits just for his story or whatever.
Sorry, I just like how you're just like, it was that no, what's a big movie? Star Wars. It was no Star Wars.
Well, I mean, that's a big movie. But, I mean, you know, that guy's life could have been totally different had he just gotten a little bit of royalties from that movie.
A little bit of help. Or if he was, if this all happened to him a little bit later, and then he could have gotten like a Man versus Wild kind of show.
That's true. It wasn't even that long ago. It was 99 when he was shot dead?
Well, yeah, but I mean, his initial thing happened in 77.
Oh, no, I know. But I'm saying, like, he was still alive not that long ago. Had he still had a stable lifestyle, you know, maybe someone would have gone back and like, oh, the original Crocodile Dundee. Let's make a, you know, let's make a reality show about him. You know, it's possible. But, I mean, yeah. I would watch it. But
if they were like, listen, take survival tips from this guy that survived for 56 days by himself, I would watch that show and believe it.
Well, I would at least tune in for the first episode, I'm sure. I'm not a big reality TV show guy. That's probably why. Right. But it sounds like an interesting premise.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the show Survivor Man, and I'm just like, well, that's all well and good, but what is this guy's credentials?
You know what, though? I'll take Survivor Man any day over that fucking Bear Grylls guy. He is an absolute prick. I don't like him at all, and I think he's an absolute fraud. The Survivor Man, he's much more boring, and I don't even think he's on anymore.
Neither of them are. Although, yeah, I will say Bear Grylls is definitely more entertaining, and he does say vitamins in a much better way.
Well, I think the Survivor Man's American, but...
Well, yeah.
No,
therefore,
you're right.
Much more entertaining.
Bear Grylls is more entertaining, but he's an asshole. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I imagine that they're probably both assholes.
I don't know. Survivor Man never seemed like an asshole to me. He just seemed kind of boring. He's like, all right, I'm set up my cameras now. So when you're making your lean-to, it's like, okay. And, like, you'd watch him go through it.
Survivor Man is very nasally. When you have a head cold and you're trying to set up a lean-to, it's very important to catch the vapors because that'll help clear up your sinuses.
I mean, and honestly, he was actually out there by himself, which was kind of cool, as opposed to Bear Grylls, who have a camera crew with.
I give the Bear Grylls camera crew, though, lots of credit, because there are parts where they actually also jump off of river, like waterfalls, and do the same shit that he's doing, but they have to hold a camera at the same time. And, I mean, they must be, like, professionally trained, but they can't be as trained as him, because he was essentially a British Navy SEAL.
Right.
He knows.
Yeah, he was.
He's seen the documents.
Yeah, no, he knows things.
I was gonna try and see if I could do a British Jesse Ventura, but I don't know.
Oh God, I can't even imagine what that would sound like. A British Jesse Ventura. Oh, it sounds terrible. I feel sick just thinking about it.
I'm gonna see if I can work on that. I was reading part that I skipped over, and this is where they kind of got the inspiration for him from. In 1981, Ansel was invited to Sydney, where he was interviewed by English journalist Michael Parkinson for his television program appropriately titled Parkinson. Uh-oh. Ansel attended the interview barefoot. While staying at the famous 5-star Sebel Townhouse Hotel, he slept in his sleeping bag on the floor rather than on his bed and was reportedly mystified by his room's bidet. Ansel's interview and Curious City antics sparked Paul Hogan's interest, inspiring him and co-writers to create the character Mick Crocodile Dundee, which had two sequels.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Crocodile Dundee 2 and then Crocodile Dundee Goes to Los Angeles or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible. You know what? I'll say this for him. I've also been mystified by bidets. And I've had ample opportunity to try a bidet. I never have. Because I'm afraid I'll enjoy it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I feel like it would be nice because you would just feel very clean down there.
You're probably right. I just don't like the idea of, I don't know, just water in my bum.
it's just not good.
I don't feel like having anything, you know, a little much for me.
So I clicked on Crocodile Dundee, and then I went to Paul Hogan here. And did you know that Crocodile Dundee was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay?
Really?
Yes. I really feel the need to go back and watch Crocodile Dundee now, because apparently it's better than I remember.
I mean, I remember liking it as a kid, but
I feel like it wouldn't hold up over time, but maybe it does.
It can't. There's no way it does.
I don't know, but I'm adding it to my Netflix list right now.
It's not
actually, I think my dad might own it, but it's probably on VHS.
Well, dads love shitty movies, so he probably does. So, you brought it up earlier, Robert Parker.
Yeah, Robert Parker.
He is not a musician. He's a writer, a crime writer, and his most famous novels were about private detective Spencer. Spencer for Hire, the ABC series, which was took place in Boston.
That's right.
And I believe that Mr. Robert Urich played Detective Spencer.
I believe he did, and now that I'm thinking of it, Avery Brooks was his black sidekick, who I incorrectly said in our first episode, I said he was from Beretta. That was completely wrong. I was thinking of Spencer for Hire.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, I know that, I don't know, I think my mother met Robert Urich while they were filming an episode of Spencer for Hire downtown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That must have been very exciting for
my mother's little brush with Hollywood. She always tells this stupid story, and I'm like, no one cares. No one even knows who Robert Urich is. Like, the only reason I know is because of you and because I'm a loser.
So if I ever meet your mom for the first time, is she going to be like, did Gregory tell you about the time I met Robert Urich?
I don't know if I like how you've given her the seductive voice. It sounds like what's a face from the Golden Girls, the whole one. I can't Blanche. It sounds like, did you ever tell how I met Robert Urich? Like, God, get lost, you're old.
Did Robert Urich take her back to his trailer? and then 9 months later you popped out? Is your dad Robert Urich?
My dad is Robert Urich. But no one gives a shit about me because no one gives a shit about Robert Urich. Who I believe is dead.
He is. I just realized that. Now I feel kind of bad.
You feel bad? When have you ever felt bad?
He was also on an episode of Emeril as, or maybe he was in the whole season of Emeril as Jerry. Emeril Lagasse's very short-lived television show.
Oh, his comedy show?
He starred in a self-titled TV sitcom.
You know, I'm not going to lie, I don't remember that at all.
It was in 2001, apparently.
It sounds like a terrible concept.
It was surprisingly canceled after several episodes. You know what's more surprising?
That someone okayed that?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't even warrant a Wikipedia page.
Oh wow, that is bad. I mean, you can get a Wikipedia page about anything.
The Baha Man had a Wikipedia page.
I mean, it could be like, wow, I took a really serious poo earlier.
And I gave it
here's
this
the wiki page about it. Video evidence.
But Emeril Lagasse 2001 TV show just goes back to the Emeril Lagasse.
That's bad. You know, I'll admit, I watched some Emeril. Not the comedy show, but the...
Don't lie. Show. You have them all on DVD.
All of them. Yeah, they all fit on one disc.
You're the guy that's doing that campaign on change.org to get it back. Everyone's like, bring back Firefly. You're going, bring back Emeril. Come on. Yep. Come on.
Come on. Oh, yeah, you caught me.
It's so funny when he uses kick it up a notch and bam in the TV show.
Oh.
He disciplines his TV daughters and going, why you? Bam.
Bam.
And then he just goes, you're grounded. Bam.
What does he use? I'm going to get
all the time.
Kick it up a notch and just making. Kick it up a notch.
All the time he's just wearing his chef whites.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He's laying in bed. His wife. He's in bed with his wife, trying to put the moves on her. And
he's like, now we're cooking. Is it warm in here? Is it just my chef uniform? I don't know about you, but I'm baking.
What's sad is he probably aired in must-see TV.
Oh, I'm sure.
Thursday night, right after Friends.
Oh my god, yeah, they lined it up, so they were just like, this is going to be a hit. People are just going to love this fucking guy.
And they probably had like a weird crossover episode.
Oh yeah, Emeril shows up at Joey's birthday party or something. He's like, oh, I made you a cake.
Yeah, somebody ends up working for him or something like that.
Thursday nights on NBC. Huh? If you don't mind, I'm going to go make love to my wife. Bam! Oh, wow.
All right. Well, that's Ben, but you're wrong. I'm Keith.
I am Greg.
And if we don't see you through the week...
We will most certainly be seeing you through the window.